You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or K&E World Network, LLC.
Henshaw and welcome. We're glad you're here for a conversation with Dawn Karima. Energetic, exciting, entertaining, and informative.
Welcome to our show today. My name is Dr. Dawn Karima, and we are thrilled that you have joined us for today's show. We are so grateful for all of you who make this show possible, who join us for this show, who share this show on social media, and are the guests and the voices that bring so much positive wisdom to our community. Today, we have an incredible guest with us. Incredible, really. Amazing work, and we're going to learn all about what he does and how he does it. Would you please introduce yourself to us?
Hello, Dr. Karima. Thanks for having me today. My name is Johnny Turner. I'm the Reentry Services Coordinator in Franklin County's Ohio Office of Justice Policy and Programs. As a Reentry Services Coordinator, I see a lot of good. In a lot of areas that we can continue to grow in. And I'm happy to share some of those ideas as well as, to a larger extent, our reentry ecosystem here in Franklin County. So, again, thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us today. Wow, it's very important work that you're doing. And I'd like to understand it better. What does reentry mean?
So, reentry is a term coined. It basically describes when individuals are released from prison and from jail, really primarily prison. And there's a process that goes with it. There may be supervision that may be involved. It may not be. But essentially, it's those individuals that are returning home, both women, men and women, are returning back to their communities and the process of restabilizing themselves and getting back on their feet.
That seems like it's quite a process. What do you think determines if someone has a successful reentry?
I think it's pretty intuitive, and then I think there's been a lot of research, studies, and reports about it. I think when individuals come home, first, just having a different and clear mindset, mm-hmm. Having had time away from home and away from your loved ones and community to, you know, just to kind of rethink about your life is a very important factor. Then I think coming home, if you have family support or what type of support can you get for yourself? Housing is always important, mm-hmm. and stable housing, and networks, friends, associates, employment is vitally important for those that don't have disabilities and need to work and want to work. Transportation, being able to get to and from work and mm-hmm. those other tasks. I think having a good plan for how to reintegrate back into your nuclear family. If you're a parent, what type of relationship have you had and will you have? Do you plan on having with your child or children? If you're married or if the caretaker of your child is the mother's child or grandmother or aunt or another relative or someone else, How are you going to interact with that individual? So I think it's a host of things that, you know, when you come home, what type of support do you have? What kind of plan do you have? How do you feel about yourself? What employment opportunities that you may have, and how you are going to go about executing it, I think plays a huge role into whether or not someone successfully reenters society.
That's fascinating. And as I listen to that, that is a really long list. Does that ever feel overwhelming?
Yeah, every day. Every day.
There's so many pieces, so many moving parts, so many things that have to work all together. How do you help folks to navigate that list?
A couple of different things in my capacity, but just in my personal life and my interest. So I'm a restored citizen myself. I was incarcerated from 2002 to 2006. And what I learned is that my circumstances were a lot different than some other individuals. And so what I learned is that, quite often people need help with navigating how to come back home and how to do things differently and live differently. So in the capacity that I work in, our office both works directly with individuals coming home, and then we work with our community partners both directly and indirectly to essentially satisfy that need. In my role, I work with our partners at the ODRC to identify individuals that are high risk, or are in need of special provisions, whether they have indicated homelessness, if they don't necessarily have the supports that they may need returning home, if they're coming to a new county or new city, leaving an institution and then reorganizing themselves in Franklin County. So it's a host of different ways that I connect with individuals via the phone, video in-reach programming that the ODRC, the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Corrections offer, as well as individuals just call in.
There's so much in what you're saying, and I want to make sure that we learn from you as much as we possibly can. First of all, I appreciate your courage and bravery in changing your life. And if you don't mind, I would like to ask you, what helped you? What really helped you to turn your life around?
So, Dr. Karima, it's kind of hard for me to say at times that my life has been completely turned around. I come from a very loving family, a whole lot of support from my mother, from my grandparents, aunts, uncles, and so forth. I appreciated education and wanted to be intelligent. So I wasn't a straight A student, but I could appreciate wanting to learn a little bit more about life and business and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So in terms of change, I mean, I really don't like to say that I changed. Mm-hmm. I was making a host of bad decisions that put me in the place that I was in. And while I was there, I determined that just was not for me, and it wasn't for my daughter, and it wasn't for the people in my life.
Well said. That's excellent. Thank you so much for that transparency. I appreciate it. And so as I think about the journeys of all kinds of different people who may have had support and people who may not have had support, what can the community do to help the folks who are in reentry?
So I think the first thing is for the community to accept the fact that people make mistakes, but even more people make bad decisions.
Okay.
And I think just as human beings, we probably tend to be biased toward certain things. And, we may have prejudices for other things. The fact that you know, well over 90% of the individuals that go to prisons will be released, says that they're coming back home, right? Mm-hmm. And we'll be interacting with them. You know, they work at the stores that we frequent. They work on supply chains. Their children attend the schools that we attend. Like 1 in 11 Ohioans have felony convictions. So I think the biggest thing is just community-wise to acknowledge the fact that individuals are coming home. Mm-hmm. And then the bigger picture is that when people do better, we all do better. When recidivism is lower, crime tends to be lower. Communities are safer. Children do better. So just having really people understand that when people go to prison and when they come home, you know, they're coming home, the vast majority. And so doing whatever we can do to help, whether it's a little bit or a lot, makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does. Thank you for that insight. I appreciate it so much, because I think for many of us, our whole perception of the legal system or prison or life after is based on media representations. Life after lockup, Law and Order episodes, Judge shows, Oz. I mean, for a lot of us, that's the only real representation, for lack of a better word, of this process in popular culture. Oh, and music, right? We have a lot of people singing or rapping or whatever in country or hip-hop about that journey. But for many of us, we don't necessarily have the right facts if we're just relying on the media, do we?
Unfortunately, no. Mm-hmm. Especially you referencing Oz and Life After Lockup, which me and my wife and I, we love to watch. It's not a fair representation. I mean, I think that so in the last 40, you know, 50, but certainly 40 years, I know a lot of us are aware of mass incarceration, at least those ideas and studies about it, and the disproportionate impact that it has had on marginalized communities, particularly those communities of brown and black communities. So I think a lot of people know that. Unfortunately, when you look at the news, the first 8 minutes, 7 to 8 minutes on the news, always captures images that, while may have occurred, probably weighs on the psyche of people and how they look at different groups of people and everything else.
Sure.
I think that with the opioid epidemic, and with all those individuals that are suffering from SUDs, substance use disorders, and mental health, and jails being overpopulated, I think that we probably know someone or know someone that knows someone that has been justice involved. So it's not, you know, you only need to look down your particular block, wherever you may be, and certainly in your community, to find, you know, someone who has had some type of justice involvement, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I listen to you, I'm learning so much, and I appreciate your authenticity and your candor, because hearing your version of it is so very different than what we see on the nightly news. But there's another group of people that you mentioned, but I don't think we hear about them with the headlines. And that is the family, the children, the spouses, the partners, the family of origin, who love these folks, who, you know, want them home and hope they'll come home. And so how do we support the extended family during this reentry process?
Well, I think first we should know that about 48%, roughly half of inmates in state institutions are parents.
Wow. Okay.
And you know, close to, I want to say maybe 30% of those children are above the age of 10. I think the average age is about 10 years old for the child. And that's at the state level. At the federal level, it's about 58%.
Oh my.
Mm-hmm. So we're talking about, you know, 2 million people, vast majority in state institutions, and then those that are in federal institutions, you know, we're looking at over half of them are parents. And so I was a child of incarcerated father, and then I became an incarcerated father.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of questions that children naturally kind of develop as they grow. Father's days are probably not the easiest. You know, then you get into ACEs, the adverse childhood experiences. So it's just having a little bit of information about that, and then having some compassion. You know, for those that are affected that may have not committed the crime or been committed to an institution. Just knowing that is one thing. The other thing is this, is that we know that that there are resources in any community, and especially here in Franklin County. A lot of our sister and brother agencies at the county level, as well as the City of Columbus, has various initiatives and programs that provide those wraparound supports for the family and for the child. So the resources are out here. There can always be more resources. I think it's about helping people navigate those resources. Mm-hmm. And then another important element, which I think we should really improve upon, are the networks that people can kind of trust and be comfortable with and learn from and then contribute to. Those things are important as well.
Well, how do we strengthen those networks?
So, again, I go back to a little bit of information. Ohio's recidivism rate fluctuates in that 30 to 35% range. And recidivism essentially is a measure or a determination on the number of individuals that actually return back to prison.
Mm-hmm.
We have 1 year, 2 year, and 3 year rates. And so in Ohio, we teeter, you know, around 30-35% given, you know, any given year. So that's the number of individuals that return within a 3 year period.
Okay.
And the recidivism actually increases after year two. So when you ask about the networks and like how do we create those networks, I think starting with, again, looking at the numbers and the information, if we know that after 2 years, individuals begin to, you know, start to hit walls, if something happening after that second year where people tend to go back and either commit new crimes or violate the terms of their probation or parole. So I think we can do a much better job of thinking about recidivism, thinking about reentry, and thinking about reintegration all kind of separately. Reentry is when you first come home.
Okay.
And you get your basic needs. You may get housing, you know, you may reintegrate back with your family, build stronger bonds, you may get a job. You may resituate yourself in the short term. Reintegration is what happens after that. So if we know that recidivism increases after that second year, we probably should think about building specialized and layered networks for individuals that once they hit that wall, that they have somewhere to go to get additional information.
Mm-hmm. That is very thought-provoking and certainly very helpful for all of us to hear and understand. And I'm fascinated because I didn't know this before, and so I see now the importance of having not just reentry, like you're coming home, we're having a barbecue, but, you know, the rest of your life, which, you know, even for everyone can be overwhelming at times. And so I'm really fascinated by what you're saying. And so it brings me to a point that I've heard a lot of this, and I would love to have your opinion on it. Can people really change?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And what makes you say that?
Well, going back to the numbers, 30 to 35% recidivate. So that means 65 to 70% do not.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so people are coming home, and they're figuring it out.
Mm-hmm.
Either with assistance, some with little assistance, some with a lot of assistance, and all in between. But, you know, individuals that go and learn their lessons, they figure it out. And so, and then I think we have to. There's a lot of individuals that end up in prison due to bad circumstances, due to bad decision making. I would venture to kind of say that there probably are far less career criminals than there are individuals that make a slew of bad decisions. So yeah, I mean, people change, people grow, people get better, people become more accountable, and you know, and then people mix in and are just regular old folk when they come home.
Mm-hmm. I think that's important for the popular culture perception, because a lot of what we see and hear about, for example, in the media, you know, are the criminal mastermind or the gang members, or, you know, there are these the idea that this is who someone is completely and totally, that they don't have a creative side, or they don't have a side that would be, you know, a great business person or entrepreneur, or they don't have a family that loves them. Those things are denied us in the representations that we receive. And so it helps to hear this from you. So should we be afraid of people who are in reentry?
You know, that's a tricky question. Mm-hmm. So if someone, you know what, that's a tricky question. I mean, I would say just from the human side, I think that we should be aware of all people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people never have a criminal history and executes a mass shooting, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
And we knew nothing about that individual.
That's right.
Whereas someone else may have committed an armed robbery, maybe a felonious assault, and may have done anywhere from 3 to 8 years, and then they come home. And the interesting statistic is that those individuals that served a longer periods of time or have more serious crimes,
mm-hmm.
Including those that have sex offenses, tend not to reoffend.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think we should always be cautious about any and all things. I think as it relates to reentry, you know, just really kind of going back to the numbers, 65 to 70% of people do not recidivate. A good number of commitments to the ODRC, the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Corrections, are for nonviolent offenses, felony 4 and felony 5 offenses. I think the average sentence is about, you know, anywhere from 18 months to 3 years, depending. So having kind of a blanket apprehension or even possible fear of those that are coming home, I don't think that it's necessary. But I mean, I think we should always be cautious with whoever we're working with or on behalf of.
I appreciate that because, you know, we have to have these kinds of conversations too. We can't get in a ditch of stereotypes and all of that, and then we can't get in a ditch on the other side of, you know, just sunshine and, you know, all of that. And so it helps to hear from you because you're bringing balance to this conversation. And balance is where then we can hear and we can change and we can grow and we can use wisdom and realize that these are individuals that we're talking about, not a monolith. And so I really appreciate you bringing that into this conversation. We need to take a break. I have to pay the bills with some commercials. But when we come back, I'm hoping that you will share some success stories. No names or identifying information, but perhaps you'll share some remarkable stories or events that you have knowledge of when we come back. So, folks, we're going to have some more great conversation. Stay right there. Be right back.
Lord, can you come and save her? Better believe it, get on your knees and pray hard, then pray hard, and never look back. Once the world forgave you.
TalkTainmentRadio.com is the premier internet radio platform offering 40-plus talk radio-style programs professionally produced, optimized for online distribution, featuring Columbus, Ohio on-air personalities. TalkTainmentRadio.com offers listeners diverse programming options covering topics such as arts and culture, love, life and relationships, technology, religion, paranormal activities, local and national politics, women's issues, alongside health and wellness. Listeners can access their favorite TalkTainmentRadio.com programs free of cost through the website. Download the TTR app to your cell phone and you can take us wherever you go. We have programs on demand to fit your schedule through our podcast. The address is TalkTainmentRadio.com.
Have you ever wished you could spend more time with your kids or maybe quality time with your spouse when you can actually have an uninterrupted conversation? Do you owe your dad a little catch-up time? Well, it's time to reconnect, and no activity can bond a family together quite like boating and fishing. I mean, think of all the great experiences you had as a kid when you went boating or fishing. Well, guess what? It's still great. Boating and fishing are the perfect opportunities for your family to get away, to talk, to laugh, to create new memories. So take someone you love out on the water and see where the water takes you. If you haven't been on the water in a while and you're not sure where to start, or if you just like to have some helpful tips for your next trip, please visit TakeMeFishing.org. This has been a public service of TalkTainment Radio. Radio, the way it should be heard.
Here's an idea. You've heard of the notion of pay it forward. It comes from the 2000 movie Pay It Forward. Basically, the premise is helping someone with no expectations of payback, providing assistance to someone, passing information on, simply doing a good deed for a total stranger, and instead of allowing them to pay it back, ask them to pay it forward. Doing favors for other people and asking them to do the same. The principle is the same as multi-level marketing, except that instead of soap or vitamins, it's generosity between strangers that is being passed on. Pay It Forward is mentoring, it's volunteering in your community, it's shoveling a neighbor's snow, or cutting an elderly person's grass for them, or taking a senior to the store. Don't wait for someone else to do something good. Do it yourself. It starts with you. Talktainment Radio strongly embraces the notion of pay it forward. In fact, we just did.
Do you overcook your pasta? Do you mix your lights with your darks and tell long, complicated jokes that have no punchline? Do you have trouble wrapping gifts? Sound like a hyena when singing happy birthday and have no idea how the metric system works? Well, if you answered yes to any of the above questions, you may have what it takes to adopt a teen from foster care, because teens don't need perfection, they need you. So if you can't tie a Windsor knot, forget to defrost the chicken, can't tell a latte from a cappuccino, confuse North and South Dakota, overuse commas, throw a frisbee like it's a flounder, and still believe kids really do love lima beans, broccoli, and Brussels sprouts, it's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to put up with you. For more information on how you can adopt, call 1-888-200-4005 or go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council. Do you overcook your pasta? Do you mix your lights with your darks and tell long, complicated jokes that have no punchline? Do you have trouble wrapping gifts? Sound like a hyena when singing Happy Birthday and have no idea how the metric system works? Well, if you answered yes to any of the above questions, you may have what it takes to adopt a teen from foster care, because teens don't need perfection, they need you. So if you can't tie a Windsor knot, forget to defrost the chicken, can't tell a latte from a cappuccino, confuse North and South Dakota, overuse commas, throw a frisbee like it's a flounder, and still believe kids really do love lima beans, broccoli, and Brussels sprouts, it's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to put up with you. For more information on how you can adopt, call 1-888-200-4005 or go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Goodwill is a global social services enterprise and the leading nonprofit provider of job training programs and career services in the United States and Canada. To pay for its program, Goodwill sells donated clothes and other household items in more than 2,700 stores and online at shopgoodwill.com. Goodwill uses the revenue earned from these sales to fund job training, employment placement services, and other community programs. The goal of the campaign is to increase goods donations to Goodwill, inspire an emotional connection to the Goodwill brand, and to elevate preference for Goodwill.
Hi, everyone. Al Roker here. As a guy with his own catchphrase, I appreciate that after 75 years, Smokey's only said,
"Only you can prevent wildfires."
But I'm filling in because there's a lot more to report. Like when it's dry or windy. Be careful burning yard waste, because wildfires can even start in your neck of the woods. Go to SmokeyBear.com to learn more about wildfire prevention. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
I can't believe he found them.
He seems sorry.
We very clearly told him not to look up there.
I'm honestly impressed that he was able to do it.
Right? What did he balance on that big chair?
I guess he'll just know what his gifts are this year.
I really thought we had hidden them well.
If they can find their presents, they can find a gun.
911, what is your emergency?
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns. Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Hey, I'm Haley Kiyoko, and I know what it's like to struggle with mental health issues. If you have a friend that's going through a tough time, now is the perfect moment to reach out. Learn how to start the conversation at seizetheawkward.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and the Jed Foundation.
Hey, it's me, your cell phone. We need to talk about something serious. I know you love me, I know you like using me wherever you are, but I feel like this isn't working out when you're driving. I know you may think that it's possible to focus both on me and the road, but I just don't feel the same way. I think we should spend time away from each other when you're driving. It's for the best.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
My mother was very familiar with her neighborhood, but one day she stopped at the stop sign and she wasn't even really sure where she was at.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Oil and gasoline prices are going through the roof.
Tell me about it. I can't afford to drive to the grocery store.
We've reached the tipping point, so I'm going to give you some tips that could save you hundreds of dollars a year on gas.
Tipping point? I've reached my clipping point. I feel like Ellen Scissorhands clipping all those coupons.
Tip number one, keep your tires properly inflated. You could save enough money to buy a gallon of orange juice every month.
Can do.
Tip number two, driving 60 instead of 70 on highways and not racing around town can buy you bacon and eggs every day.
Wow!
Tip number three, cut the idling. lower the AC, and ditch the junk in the trunk. That could buy you bread and butter, and maybe some grits.
You mean by driving smarter, I can eat breakfast free for a year? Wow!
For more wow tips for your pocketbook and the planet, go to the Alliance to Save Energy's website, drivesmarterchallenge.org.
Can I substitute a prune Danish for the grits?
Lead, inspire, change the world again. Join thousands and find which volunteer opportunity is best for you. Call 1-800-424-8867 today or visit www.getinvolved.gov. This message is brought to you by the Corporation for National and Community Service and this station.
This conversation is powerful and transformational, and it's all because of the guest that we have today. Would you please reintroduce yourself to our friends who are listening?
Absolutely. Johnny Turner, I'm the Reentry Services Coordinator for Franklin County's Office of Justice Policy and Programs.
I'm so happy that you're here, and I'm so thankful that you are courageous and brave in sharing with us, you know, and dealing with this subject in a way that we can all learn from, and I appreciate that so much. In your work, have you had some notable experiences with folks?
So, you know what, Dr. Cream, that would depend upon your description of it. I mean, I have witnessed a lot of people move forward in their lives, yes.
Mm-hmm. And do any of those stand out in your memory that you might be able to share with us?
A couple. Here in Columbus, Ohio, was a construction project, I want to say back in 2011, and it was the building of the Ohio State Wexner Medical Center. Mm-hmm. The company that I worked for at the time was a minority contractor on the project, and it was one of our tasks was to reach out and identify minority contractors and then identify minority contractors that had a minority business certification and those that didn't still bring them into the fold so that they can get information.
Mm-hmm.
The other task that we had was to reach out into the community and identify individuals that were interested in working in construction. And so we compiled a list of well over 1,500 individuals. Throughout the duration of that project, we kept learning that some individuals were ineligible because of their past felony offenses.
Mm.
So our president of the company at the time went to the primary contractor, had a series of conversations, and they lightened up the restrictions. And so we know of a couple dozen at the higher end of dozen, probably close to 50 or more individuals that had criminal histories and were justice involved work on that project. So that was a big standout project for me because there's still individuals still to this day around Christmas and certain holidays that reach out, say hello, and they were able to get not just living wage jobs, but really, really good jobs and become homeowners and other things. So that was a big project that I hold fondly to my heart.
Of course. Thank you. That's very inspiring, and I appreciate you sharing that with us. I think we need those kinds of stories as part of the conversation. And, you know, it helps us, all of us, to understand and to empathize and to support and be encouraged. And I'm fascinated, too, because I think there's a lot of misinformation about reentry.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I think about, you know, just movies, I think about social media, there's just reentry. There's just a lot of misinformation surrounding that. And so what do you want us to know about reentry that we may not already know?
Couple things. Number one, the vast majority of individuals that are incarcerated are coming home, more than 90%. Know that there are more individuals that have justice involvement, may not have necessarily been committed to an institution, but may have some felony convictions on their criminal records. And so so that means that there's a lot of people out here that we don't know, that we don't even know that we're interacting with, that, that may have a criminal background. I think the other thing that people should be aware of is really the difficulties. You know, I earlier mentioned a couple of times that recidivism here in Ohio, the recidivism rate is about 30 to 35%, but on the other side of that, that 65 to 70% of those individuals that don't come home, mm-hmm. And so they overcome a lot of barriers, collateral sanctions associated with where they can work, how they can work, mm-hmm. Whether or not they're on probation or on supervision. There are rules and restrictions that provide guidance for how they are to associate and network. And then there's also that family strain. The mm-hmm. individuals want to come right back home and begin to contribute without necessarily having all of their kind of matters set. So when I think about the 65 or 70%, the thing that I want people to know is that this is a gritty group of individuals mm-hmm. that at some point have decided that they will not put themselves in a position to commit any more crimes and take themselves away from society and from their family. So that's what I want people to know.
I appreciate that. That is very helpful to me. I'm sure it's helpful to our friends just to know that and to understand that. Do you believe that restored citizens, folks who, whatever, at whatever level, should do full disclosure of their past? Like they start dating somebody, or they meet new people, or they join a church. Do you believe they should tell? Should they talk about their past or not?
You know what, I think on a case-by-case basis.
Okay.
Okay, so this is more personal me and not necessarily speaking from the position that I hold.
Oh, okay.
If someone, and this is just my opinion I'm sharing. So if someone is dating someone, right? Mm-hmm. And let's say it's a man, and the man is dating a woman, and that woman has children, mm-hmm. right? If this man has a sex offense, she should know about that,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, she should know about that, and she should want to know about that.
Mm-hmm.
There are sex offense registries out there for individuals that they can look up people and find them as well. If this is something where it may be a crime that was committed, maybe a burglary, mm-hmm. maybe a receiving stolen property, and you're part of a church community, is that necessary for you to disclose? Not necessarily. If mm-hmm. it's something that happened 5 years ago and 10 years ago, you know, are you a threat to the church community? Probably mm-hmm. not. So I think on a case-by-case basis.
Well said. Thank you so much. And I appreciate you answering these kinds of questions, because they're the kinds of questions that folks don't have a chance to ask, right? They don't. Mm-hmm. There's nobody to ask. You know, so they just make it up. And I appreciate your life experience and your expertise. I want to think about parenting. I want to think about children, because something you said really stood out. Is this a cycle? Is this something that passes from generation to generation in a lot of cases?
Yes, it does. I share with you the past mm-hmm. and mine.
Mm-hmm.
Uh, children that have incarcerated parents have a much higher likelihood of being justice involved and being incarcerated themselves versus their peers that do not. Mm. And then it's a host of known and unknown impacts and the effect that that has on a child in their early years through their adolescent years, teenage and so forth. There are things that are known and are unknown about that impact, but certainly that void creates an economic strain for many, many individuals, especially those poor families that have someone incarcerated. It can impact health, the stress that a child endures, the prevalence of the development of chronic diseases, academic performance. Is also related to it. So it's a lot that we know about it, and then it's a lot that we don't. But quite often, when little Johnny, which was literally me, is disruptive in class, it may be some underlying things that are there.
And so what can schools and volunteers and churches and people who care about children, who really see them as valuable and precious, what can we do for those children?
So I think I want to acknowledge and celebrate the fact that communities, churches, neighborhoods, schools, they are doing really good work.
Mm-hmm.
They do offer counseling and cognitive behavioral therapies. They do offer family support, not just for mom or grandmom or aunt or an extended family member. There are a lot of resources that are out here. Mm-hmm. I think what we probably could do a much better job of is trying to identify and trying to quantify the number locally. A lot better. There may be some things, you know, and I don't want to speak out of turn, but there may be certain considerations that have to be made, especially as it relates to privacy. But the quicker that resources and caring people can provide interventions and assistance to families, the better off the child and the family will be.
That's so important, and I'm so thankful that you helped us to see that, because your personal experience is so valuable in terms of your perspective on all of this. And I want to make sure that you tell us anything you want us to know about your journey, your work, that we may not have touched on yet. You, your life, your whatever it is that you think is important to you.
I wake up every day with gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know and I really understand that people arrive in institutions, they arrive in front of judges and they become justice involved for a wide range of things.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the most genuine people that I've met in my life have had some justice involvement, and that people that are justice involved are just regular people looking for opportunities to improve their lives and to be accountable and to contribute. So, I wake up with gratitude. I look forward to going in. Every call tends to be a problem or issue, but that's okay because I'm very grateful to serve in the role and the capacity that I'm serving.
I'm grateful that you chose to do this work, and I wondered, how did you choose to make this your career? I mean, many people, you know, they would have overcome the circumstances and wanting to put it in the rearview mirror or move on to some other field. They might not have wanted to work closely with it, but you have. And what helped you to make that decision?
I think that just early on as a child, I recognized that people had disadvantages.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to think that I have a caring heart. At least that's what my mother and others have said. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I can remember at different points in my life, I remember sitting on the porch one day when I was a teenager and looking around. There was about 6 to 8 guys on my porch, and all of them had felonies, and none of us were over 20.
Oh wow!
I remember that. I remember the only one. I was the only one at the time that didn't have a felony. I remember when I was incarcerated, and I would just observe how the younger guys, 18 to 23, 24 year olds, just how they kind of carried themselves, the conversations that I overheard them had, the behaviors that they displayed. And I will always, you know, kind of think I might be able to do something about that. I might be able to do something about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I prayed about it. You know, I prayed about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I got my prayer. So that's how I ended up where I'm at.
That's amazing. And it's inspiring as well. And I really believe that there is a great call. People are called to do great things. And I thank you for answering that call when it came to you. We have a lot of youth who listen to this show. We have folks who use it for homeschooling. We have classrooms that use it. We have college students that listen to this show, and it's part of the curriculum. And we have all kinds of people from all kinds of backgrounds. And so I'm going to give you these few minutes that we have left and ask you, will you please speak directly from your heart? Maybe you'll speak to our youth, our young people out there. Maybe you'll speak to folks who are in reentry. You know, we have listeners all over the world. So we don't know what folks are going through, but God does. And I believe that He always makes sure that we have the right people who will say the right thing that will help somebody who is listening to us. So will you just take a few minutes and just speak to us from your heart, please?
Yes, I will. Thank you. I would say to young people, whether they are involved in the criminal justice system, or if they know people that are, or if they're interested in working in it in the future, just know that if you're someone who has committed a crime, that is not the totality of who you are. If you're someone who is a friend or an associate of another young person that may have had some justice involvement and, you know, and trying to figure some stuff out in their lives, that you can be an ally to them and always encouraging. And then I would say to the young people that may want to in some way be connected to the criminal justice system, whether it's working for a local, state, a federal agency, being an attorney, or one day being the head of the DOJ, always keep a humane lens handy. Know that the vast majority of people that do commit crimes, sometimes it's a series of bad decisions. Oftentimes it may be that one or two times, but just have a humane lens. I would want people to know that mass incarceration is real, and that we as a society can do better. That we need to not only hold our elected officials and leadership accountable, but we also need to hold accountable those individuals that may have gone off path, may have made some bad decisions. So for me, I just hope that people begin to remove the stigma associated with the ex-offender or the former felon, and all those other really unkind and ungenerous kind of ways of describing people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that there's so much substance use and abuse, mental health, undiagnosed mental health challenges. I think people coming from more challenged communities have stressors, both known and unknown, that contribute to the way people act, behave, and carry on. So I would just hope that people understand that, you know, the vast majority of people, like I say over and over, are coming home. And whether it's a little thing that you can do or a lot, a little thing may be a prayer, and then a lot of things may be a prayer. It may be volunteering. It may be learning more about it. It may be, you know, seeking out networks that you can help people be a part of, or even creating a network.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think it's, you know, just having people know that it's a community thing. People make bad decisions. Some people make mistakes. People are coming home, and it's best community-wide for all of us to have an interest in it. At least be aware of it, and if you can, contribute to people doing better.
Oh, that was great. And I thank you for sharing that with us, for all you shared with us today. We are so honored that you were with us and that you helped us to understand more and to know more about a situation that, you know, is all around us, all around us. And yet we may not have access to good information and wisdom about it. I've learned a lot from you, and I know all of our friends who listen today are learning, are growing because of what you shared with us. So I want to say thank you so much. Thank you very much for the work you're doing, for the people that you're helping, for your faithfulness to the call to help them, and for being here with us today.
I want to thank you, Dr. Karima, for inviting me. Thank you for allowing me to speak from both a professional voice as well as personal. I appreciate the questions that you asked. It was a few of them that I had to really kind of think about and answer as best I can and as honestly as I can. And I appreciate you offering a platform to kind of talk about this. So. I wish you all the wellness as you continue to kind of help all of our different communities learn more and more about people and each other.
Thank you so much. I'm so blessed. I want to say thank you to our sponsors, to our donors who make this show possible, to each of you that listen. I want to say thank you to the Red Carpet Awards in Holland. It's coming up, and we are nominated for Best Program, Best Host, and 5 other awards. And that is a tremendous honor for all of you who listen in Europe to like this show and to like what we do. And we thank you for that. And we thank all of you who share on social media, who help us spread the word about our show. And it's a labor of love. You know, we all do it just because we love God and we love people. And so for all of you who pray for us and, you know, we get your messages, your encouragement and your blessings. And, you know, the other day I opened a card and there was a $5 bill in it. And I just want to say thank you. Thank you for every person who does anything for us. You don't have to do it, but you do. And we are grateful. We're grateful. This has been a great conversation. And I can't wait till all of us get together and have another conversation with Dawn Karima next time.
To come and save her, better believe they get on their knees and pray hard. They pray hard and never look back. What the world forgave you.
Yeah, oh Lord, can you come and save her? Better believe they get on their knees and pray hard, then pray hard, and never look back once the world forgave.
You've got the power, the world's greatest radio, TalkTainmentRadio.com.